You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Well, 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 there you go. You got a rally on Saturday. Save public housing. Interesting. Now, so that's this Saturday, 11 a.m. at the Victorian State Library. Now, what I need to know is what you're doing with your life. Not that I really care. So if you've got nothing to do, and you don't mind the cold, there's dinner tonight down at Frankston at La Pulquitas. Supporters of this program and other programs and public interest before corporate interests and, you know, public housing, everybody's business, you're more than welcome to attend. Starts at 6:30 p.m. That's at Frankston, La Pulquitas on the Nepean Highway, so you can't miss it. Come and join us. Meet interesting people and meet boring people. We have the whole range of people that come to dinner. Now, if you can't make it to Frankston because you've refused to cross the Yarra, and we do have listeners who refuse to cross the Yarra, believe it or not, you can actually, the person who's pushing the buttons who'll remain nameless, who's helping somebody else push the buttons before, doesn't cross the Yarra. Well, for people like her, we're doing something strange next month. We're going to have the North of the Yarra dinner on the first Wednesday of the week, starting at 6:30 p.m. at Naruda's Restaurant, which is the corner of Albert Road and Breeze Street, there near the station. We'll tell you more about that next week. But, you know, if you don't cross the Yarra, we do want, you know, here. And just in case you still go to Footscray, on the third Wednesday, which I've forgotten exactly what it is in August, but you'll know because obviously you've got more brains than I'll ever have, we're having a presentation on the background to the Australian Constitution, which should be riveting because, you see, most of our listeners and Australians don't realise that the way we are structured is totally dependent on the Australian Constitution. You know, one of these little documents which nobody reads, which I read every night looking for loopholes. So there will be that on the third Wednesday in August. So there's a few things coming up. And don't forget the Save Public Housing rally, 11 a.m. this Saturday at the Victorian State Library. Now, what else have we got organised? Well, there's a few more other things organised coming up. Don't forget Eureka Day on the 3rd of December. Don't forget Tanaminawa and Morbohina Day on the 25th of January next year. Don't forget the rally we're going to organise, or vigil we're going to organise, on the steps of the Victorian Parliament House to mark the 50th anniversary of the dismissal of the Whitlam Labor Government on the 11th of November. There's so many things happening out there, and obviously there's the Sunday Palestinian rallies, which I'm sure most of you go to. The sacred cows have wandered in. They said, Joe, you've been boring as usual. Why don't you organise something nice? Like, why don't you give away prizes, you know, to people so they listen to The Anarchist World this week? No, we don't have prizes. The only prize is you get to listen to me for 56 minutes. Welcome to The Anarchist World this week. Broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name's Joseph Toscano. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. If you wonder what anarchy is all about, no, it's not about dancing in the streets, although you could do that if you wanted to. And obviously people do. Anarchos means without rulers. It's about the anarchist struggle is the struggle to create a society without rulers, not without rules. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people? Inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggle is a struggle to devolve power or share power, possibly through direct democratic means. It's the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. It's not about nationalism. It's not about militarism. You know, it's about how we create a society without rulers. And if you look at the world today, you can see the impact that rulers, elected or self-appointed, have on the world as I speak. Now, I think today it'll be a particularly boring program because I'll be looking at issues, and obviously most people aren't interested in issues. You're basically interested in, you know, giveaways if you listen to the radio and competitions and all that stuff. So if you're interested in that and you're listening to The Anarchist World this week, move on. Don't waste 56 minutes of your life listening to analysis. It can be quite boring, but it can be quite educational because it can throw a light on why you've got that existential angst every morning you wake up. The first thing I'd like to look at and spend a fair bit of time on is the corporatization of every aspect of everyday life. That's a good title, isn't it? The corporatization of every aspect of everyday life. So what am I talking about? What's corporatization? Corporatization is basically the end point of a system which is based on a private investment for private profit mantra. What it means is little fish are eaten by big fish and bigger fish eat bigger fish to the stage when we get two or three corporations dominating every aspect of our lives. And what we've seen over the last 50 years is the expansion of corporatization as part of our economic network. So I know it may sound boring talking about the economy, but unfortunately it does have a profound implication on all our lives. So how did it come to this? Why did we allow it to come to this? What does it mean in terms of everyday experience? Well, the common denominator is market domination by a few entities that are privately owned. We see this in social media, where a few entities dominate the marketplace. We see this in housing, where a few corporations dominate the marketplace. We see this in the early childhood development area, where a few corporations dominate the marketplace. We see it in aged care, where a few corporations dominate the marketplace. We see it in private health care, where an increasing small number, what a tautology, dominate the marketplace. So what it means in reality, when you walk into a temple of consumption somewhere in the suburbs or the CBD, you walk into these islands of consumption where you, if you've got the disposable income, you can walk in and you can buy what you like. Or when you kind of surf the net, what you see is the same brand names over and over and over again. Whether it's takeaway food, whether it's early childhood development, whether it's childcare, whether it's healthcare, whether it's the clothes you wear, you may walk in and you see 16 different stores, but you may find that 10 of them are owned by the same corporation. You see it in superannuation, and the list goes on and on. So corporatization is about market domination. It's about dominating the marketplace. And if you dominate the marketplace, you are in a great position to expand your profits and influence. Because we get to the situation where you become too big to fail. Whereas a corporate entity, you begin to dictate legislation. Not in terms of forcing governments, you know, to pass legislation that influence helps you, but in terms of the fact that the government's legislative agenda is crafted in such a way as not to affect your market domination, because if it affects your market domination, then you are in a real position to create havoc in society. Now, I'm sick and tired of us as people having to put up with this market domination. We do live in a capitalist society. But even in a capitalist society, you do not need to be dominated by a decreasing number of corporations, whether it's food, with the selling of food, whether it's the manufacturing sector. And the list goes on and on. The situation has become so ridiculous that the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission was actually set up to ensure competition exists. But competition doesn't exist in a capitalist society which is dominated by corporations. And every time we hear about shortcomings, whether it's the aged care sector, whether it's the early childhood development sector, whether it's the private healthcare sector, whether it's food distribution, whether it's manufacturing, the fact is that we have allowed the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication to dominate the marketplace to such an extent that any opposition to their domination has been neutralised. Look at the pathetic state of the Australian trade union movement. Less than 12% of workers are in trade unions. Look at the legislation which has been passed to make striking outside enterprise bargaining agreement period a criminal offence. So market domination occurs in many ways. One, it occurs because there is no legislation in place to effectively prevent corporations dominating the marketplace, which means when I talk about dominating the marketplace, it means equals exploiting their customers, because that's what market domination allows you to do, because there's no competition. So think about it. When you go out, when you're on the net, when you're talking to your friends, when you're drinking that beer that you've been waiting for. Now, obviously, there is a small business sector. There is a minuscule collective and cooperative sector, but there is a small business sector. But that small business sector is nothing more than an appendage to corporations, because 90% of small businesses close within 5 years of being established, because it's impossible for them to compete in a marketplace which is dominated by these corporations who can make losses for a short period of time to drive competitors out of business. Or if they see a competitor that may affect their bottom line, obviously they'll give them they'll buy them out. So it's something to think about. I mean, look at the domination in the fast food sector. And the fact is that governments do have the power to stop corporations growing bigger and bigger. But they won't use that power, although they've been elected by the population to look after the interests of the many, not the few. They won't use that power because they're concerned about the consequences of facing entities who are too big to fail. And we see this in the financial sector. Irrespective of the findings of a Royal Commission a few years ago, we still see the financial sector carry on in the same way, exploiting both their customers and their workers. And that's what market domination allows you to do. It's not just about exploiting your customers or the people who need your services or goods, but it's also about exploiting the people who work for you in terms of putting the owners of the corporations, or if they're on the if they're listed on the stock market, on their major investors' interest before your interest as a customer or as a worker in that organisation. So I think it's something we should think about as we go about our everyday lives. I try personally not to use, if I can help it, corporations. It's difficult. It may mean I have to do a little bit more work in terms of, you know, lose a bit more time. But we do have that option. Sometimes accessing an option can be difficult. And there are, you know, there's always a price, you know, a price. That price may be a loss of time. It may be much easier to log on to your social media network and, you know, deal with some corporation. It's the same in the financial sector, early childhood development. Now, not all aspects are dominated by corporations. Maybe they've got 70% market share, 80% market share, 90% market share in a particular field. But you do have the option of not using them. There is always that option. But you won't exercise that option unless you understand or know which corporation dominates which aspect of the goods or services that you want to access. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Look, I just like to, I mean, I think The Anarchist World This Week has somehow, because of my age, become a little bit like a, you know, a the death notices. Now, I've just been, I was alerted yesterday that John O'Brien from Geelong in Melbourne died a few weeks ago. Now, John O'Brien was a trade unionist, an activist. He was a foundation member of the Tunaminawai Mawbohina Commemoration Committee in 2006, and he was an active member of that committee till a few years ago. He provided financial support for the West Papuan office in Collins Street. And he was involved in many activities both in Geelong and Melbourne during his lifetime. So we extend our condolences to John's family and friend and friends. It is distressing. It is distressing to see so many activists who became, so many people who became activists in the late 1960s and the early 1970s leaving us. It's quite distressing. But the good thing to remember is for each generation that leaves, there is a new generation that resists. The issues may change, but the fact is, ultimately, it's about power and wealth. And it's good to see so many people involved in activities that challenge the centralisation of power and the acquisition of wealth in our society. So in many regards, those who go before us are those who've actually shown us the way forward. And we thank them for their contributions. And in many regards, contributions which are not acknowledged. Never acknowledged in society as a whole. Because to acknowledge their contributions towards the creation of a more egalitarian and fairer community would mean acknowledging that the type of society we live in has shortcomings, major shortcomings. So rest in peace, John O'Brien. Let's move on. Root cause. Now, you may not realise there's a huge debate about crime, bail, the introduction of reintroduction of spit hoods in the Northern Territory, the strengthening of bail laws in Victoria. And we've got opposition parties and governments talking about, you know, hard edge law, more jails, incarcerate more people. Now, obviously, if you're a victim of a violent crime or a victim of a property crime, it's understandable that what you're looking for is a little bit of justice. And we have debates about the root causes of crime. We have these continuous debates about the root causes of crime in our community and about the punishment that needs to be meted out to deal with an increase in crime. Now, I've been around a long time, and I assume most of our listeners have been around a long time, because why would a young person waste their time listening to radio? But that's a different story we can talk about another day. The fact is, there is always crime in the community. Let's not forget that in the 19th century, there were 400 hanging offences in England. Let's not forget that the Australian colony was formed as a prison colony. Unfortunately, we don't have spaceships we can send criminals to the moon, but we obviously need to look at the reasons, the root cause. Now, I'm sick and tired of people blaming families. Why don't we look at the real root causes of criminal activity? Obviously, not all criminal activity is related to the type of society we live in, but a significant proportion is. Especially property crime. Obviously, there's always, will be, interpersonal violence, although we do what we can to minimise it within our community. But what's the root cause? It's about time we actually looked at the structure of our society. How so many young people, and I'm talking about 12, 13, 14, 15-year-olds, feel and believe they have no future in our society. And one of the root causes, not all, but one of the root causes is the fact that we do not have a mechanism via which to incorporate an increasing number of people, an increasing number of young people who do not want to go to higher education, who may not be in a position to learn a trade. We have no mechanism via which we are able to deal with the concept that they have no future, that they believe they have no future. And in many regards, they don't have a future because of the type of society we've become. So it doesn't matter how tough the bail laws are. The fact is that if you remove the social elevator, and that's what we've done over the last 30 to 40 years, where people can educate themselves or work themselves out of that particular situation where they're denied access to the basic necessities of life, where their carers or their guardians or their parents find themselves in a situation where they're living a hand-to-mouth existence, while we see extraordinary amount of taxpayers' money being diverted to private schools in this country, we begin to realise that the root causes of crime are interlinked with the type of society we have and interlinked to how wealth is not only created but distributed in our society. So having 400 hanging offences in England in the 18th century, in the early 19th century, didn't root out crime. Creating penal colonies in Australia didn't root out crime. What decreased crime was when more and more people, more and more ex-convicts, were integrated into society through having a mechanism via which they could both create wealth and share wealth. That's the lesson. If you want to decrease crime, you need to redistribute wealth. You need to find new ways of creating wealth. You need to find ways of integrating people into society. And with the artificial intelligence, in inverted commas, hanging over society's shoulders, the fact is that fewer and fewer human beings will need to be involved in the productive process in order to create wealth. And that creates the same problem which occurred in the Roman Empire over 2,000 years ago. What do you do? Because seeing that 2,000 years ago, the artificial intelligence was slave labour. As the Roman Empire expanded and more slaves were incorporated into the Roman Empire, there was less and less need for plebeians, Roman citizens. So what did the ruling classes do? They introduced a rudimentary universal basic income, bread and circuses, you know, in common parlance. So we face the same problem in our society. There is a minuscule role for an increasing number of people in the inclusion in work. And in our society, unless you're lucky enough to be an investor and you don't get your hands dirty, most people need paid work in order to survive and possibly even prosper. So if you remove that from people, you will get an increase in crime because people cannot survive or move forward on a social security system which is basically based on keeping people's body and soul together but not giving them any options in terms of their future. So next time you hear some idiot talk about the root causes, you know, family discipline, drug addiction, this and that, well, maybe you could raise the fact of the growing inequality which exists in our society, that one third of the population lives on social security benefits which barely cover the cost of living, that talk about the increasing pressure on working people who find that you need two people in a household to actually be working full-time, to actually make ends meet, and the effects that has on a family unit, and the list goes on and on. So if you want to talk about root causes, let's talk about the real root causes, and let's talk about the fact that we need significant, radical change in terms of the way we create wealth and the way wealth is distributed. And it's about time that a universal basic income was the forefront, not just of radical politics, but of all politics, including conservative and reactionary politics.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
You're listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Now, I've got a little question for you. Well, something I thought of yesterday, and obviously, who knows? What do the Israeli cabinet and the National Party of Australia have in common? What do the Israeli cabinet and the National Party have in common? Think about it. Well, they're both blind. They're blind to reality. Now, obviously, when the Australian Prime Minister, Mr. Albanese, talks about it being incomprehensible for the Israeli cabinet to deny that they're using starvation as a weapon in the Gaza carnage, it's obviously they have lost all grip of reality. They have no idea what reality is. No idea whatsoever. While the world recoils in horror at what's happening in Gaza, but doing very little about it currently, the fact is that the fact is a fact. That the starvation as a weapon is the Israeli government's final weapon they can use to try not only destroy Hamas, but destroy and degrade and humiliate the Palestinian people, not just in the Gaza, but in the West Bank, where they've been murdered by Israeli Defence Force-backed civilian, armed civilian militias, and their land being stolen. So what's that got to do with the National Party? Well, it's the same with the National Party in terms of the climate emergency or climate change, whatever you like to call it. Here we have significant elements of the National Party, despite an increasing number of farmers and graziers understanding the extent of the damage caused to their bottom line by the climate emergency, continuing to deny that we have human-engineered climate change. Extraordinary. What we have is ideology superseding reality. And when you get to that type of situation, the only way for that to be rooted out of society is for these elements to be ridiculed, because they can't even see what's in front of them because of their ideological bias. It's just extraordinary. So they have a lot in common. The fact that they have no time for reality. They live in fairyland, which they've created. A little bubble where they talk amongst themselves,
saying it doesn't exist while the floodwaters rise. It doesn't exist while the tropical cyclones come. It doesn't exist when we've got the, you know, hottest periods in human recorded history, and the list goes on and on. Come on, boys and girls. At least acknowledge that a fact is a fact. So, interesting, isn't it? It took a few pictures of a few starving children for the Western media to take some interest in what's happening in Gaza. Over the last 20 months, we have seen horrors that you would not expect in the 21st century. Collective punishment of a population because of what their government did. Collective punishment, where we have seen atrocity after atrocity after atrocity after atrocity, including mass starvation, mass murder, accepted as the price that the Palestinian people have to pay for Hamas's atrocities in Israel in October 2023. We see a landscape which has been obliterated by Israeli bombs. The only good thing about this current situation is that an increasing number of Israeli reservists, and everybody I think under 40, it can be called up into the Israeli army at any time, especially during a time of conflict, are refusing to take up arms against the Palestinians. Because even in Israel, the revulsion of what their government is doing in Gaza is beginning to have an impact among Israeli citizens. So what do? We say, oh, well, it's incomprehensible. It's genocide. It's against, you know, was it human law or whatever it is? You know, international law. It's against international law. But what do? Well, France says, well, we recognise Palestine. Britain says we may recognise Palestine. Our government says, oh, it's incomprehensible that the Israeli cabinet can't even see the starvation on their doorsteps. Now, I've got a few suggestions, and they're simple suggestions. And the type of suggestions you'd do if you had a guest in your home who behaved in this manner, you chuck them out. So why doesn't the French government, the British government, the Australian government — we wouldn't expect it from the American government, but the United States government, we'll talk about that in a minute — why don't we chuck out the Israeli ambassador and close down the Israeli embassy in this country? That is one way we can demonstrate as a people that what is happening in Gaza is totally, totally unacceptable. And if that government continues to, you know, do what it does, under the guise it's about protecting the Israeli state, well, then it's time they were chucked out. This is a pariah state that has no respect for anything, that is willing to use collective punishment, that is willing to use starvation, that is willing to lay cities in Gaza and to a lesser extent into the West Bank into a pile of rubble. This is a government that is happy to accept that 60,000 Palestinians, 70% women and children, have been killed as a result of murdered. I won't say killed, but murdered by the Israeli state. And we continue to hold out our hand to their embassy and our ambassador, especially when the deputy ambassador came out and said it's fiction that there is starvation in Gaza that has been induced by the Israeli government. Chuck them out. Chuck them out. Get rid of them. They're not welcome in this country. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia and by the Community Radio Network. So something else, you know, I've been a doctor for 50 years, all right? 50 bloody years. It's a long time. And when you're a medical practitioner, you deal with pain and loss. It's part and parcel of your bailiwick. I mean, you may be a banker, a plumber. You may be unemployed. You may be a student. But people involved in the health field, nurses, doctors, paramedics to a lesser degree, deal with pain and loss. Part of a dehumanisation process, and this is what we're seeing in Gaza and to a lesser degree in Ukraine, part of a dehumanisation process is to not accept the fact that pain and loss is an emotion which is universal, irrespective of who you are, what your culture is, especially pain and loss of the people around you, especially children. And the younger the child that dies, the greater the pain and loss. We expect old people like me to die. And on this program over the last few weeks, I've been talking about older activists who've died. We expect it. The pain and loss is there, but it's something you take in your stride. But when you see the murder of women and children and the elderly, indiscriminate murder, and you see the anguish and the pain and the loss that the people in that situation, around these people, are experiencing, you begin to understand that this is a universal emotion. And one of the most striking words I've heard from Gaza is from a woman whose child had been blown to bits who said, "We are human beings. We are not animals. We are human beings." And it's time we began to understand this is not just about murder. This is about the brutalization of generations of young Palestinians who've been forced to witness things and experience things that none of us will ever have to face in our lives. And the fact is, their pain and their suffering, the pain and suffering of those who continue to live through these horrors, are just as relevant as the pain and suffering of the Israelis who lost relatives and friends through the Hamas slaughter. It's just as relevant as the pain and suffering you and I feel when somebody close to us dies, especially if they die violently. So think about it, how dehumanisation works. And when you dehumanise a population, you create the conditions which allow those that perform those acts, that allows them to justify those acts. And one thing about the Nuremberg trials that occurred as part of the reaction to the Holocaust was very simple. The Nuremberg trials highlighted that the individual
is responsible for their actions and can't hide behind the fact that they were given orders. And it's good to see an increasing number of Israeli reservists are refusing to participate in the massacres and the genocide, because ultimately the standard you accept is the standard you walk past. So Gaza is not just about what's happening in Gaza. The Palestinian struggle isn't just about the Palestinian struggle. It's much more than that. It's about what makes us human, how we react to that, and whether we are willing to walk away from these atrocities. This is the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. Are you an investor? Do you have disposable income? Well, if you're in Australia and you're in the workforce, you're an investor, but you don't know it because your super fund is out there trying to make money for you so you can pay for your own retirement. Yeah. Now, do you know, and I found this interesting, that the US dollar has depreciated by 13% since the Buffalini was elected into the White House? And that's significant. See, when something depreciates, when a currency depreciates, it's mean that people are pulling their money out of the USA. As more and more money is pulled out of the USA, the value of the US dollar drops. Interesting. That's all I can say. Interesting. Now, when the buffoon in Washington tells us it's all well and good, the fact is that the buffoon really does not have any idea of reality. Now, we've seen Mr. Murdoch and his minions trying to disentangle themselves from the Washington White House by putting out a few juicy rumours about the buffoon's relationship with the late Mr. Epstein, which is something they wouldn't have dared do a few weeks ago. Let's not forget, it is the Murdoch media and Fox News and reality TV which are the instruments which created the buffoon and his followers, who in many regards have a lot in common with the Israeli cabinet or the National Party, that they don't actually seem to understand what reality is. And what I keep saying is, you know, reality doesn't care. It doesn't care whether you're black or white. It doesn't care if you're male or female or non-binary. It doesn't care. It really does not care. Nature does not care about the human race. We are just another parasite. And irrespective of what ideology we follow, if we refuse to accept facts, then we're fools. Because we will, well, maybe not me and you because we're old, but younger generations will have to carry that curse. Think about it. Because ultimately, a fool is a fool is a fool. And the problem with the Buffalini has is he's got no credibility. Some people call him Taco. I don't. Taco, was it Trump? Always caves in or caves over, whatever it is. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in the fact that we now have a government in place which feels that they and they alone have the power to create a situation which puts the world at their feet. And that's what this is about.
It's about the American government and the Republican Party, and a majority of Americans believe that we owe them a favour. There are 8 billion people on the planet and counting, and there's about 350 million people living in the United States of America. What's that? Less than maybe, 4% of the population of the world? And somehow that 4% need to genuflex to the USA, I should say kowtow. I don't think curtsying would be adequate for the buffoon in Washington, but need to kowtow. And what I find most disgusting about living in Australia in 2025 is the fact that we continue to kowtow to this fool. There is a big wide world out there, and it's about time we cut that umbilical cord to the land of the brave and the free, because they're no longer brave. It's not very brave attacking the most vulnerable members of your community, and they're no longer free. If the big, what is it, the big bad bill or the big beautiful bill, whatever they call it, pouring billions of dollars which need to be created out of thin air in order to create this authoritarian apparatus which primary goal is to maintain the Republican Party in power through fear. Just an extraordinary situation. And we're supposed to kowtow to this? We're supposed to listen to every word this buffoon says? For example, you know, he says to Putin in Russia, you don't stop the war in 12 days, we're going to do something about it. He's got no credibility. Why doesn't he just say the same thing in Gaza? If you don't stop the war, the carnage in Gaza, it's not a war, carnage in Gaza in 12 days, we'll do something about it. Well, then maybe there'd be some credibility. But this huge rhetoric reality gap. And the problem is, we are seen around the world as loyal allies of the buffoon. We have United States bases on Australian soil. We have an increasing number of United States troops in Northern Australia. We've seen one of the biggest joint military exercises that this country has ever seen just finish over the last few days. And somehow we're supposed to bend over and take it because we've been asked to bend over and take it. And it's just extraordinary how the world, well, the Western world, seems to have crumbled as it races to do a deal with the buffoon and his entourage in the land of the brave and the free. What an extraordinary situation we find ourselves in 2025. Now, a lot of people say, Jay, you're cynical. Well, I'm not cynical. If I was cynical, I wouldn't be here. Why would I waste my time trying, and the key word is trying, to analyse what's happening in the world today, but taking a different view to what most commentators do? I have a great belief in the capacity of people to initiate change, positive change, not negative change, although people, you know, can initiate negative change, but initiate positive change, which increases our ability to make decisions collectively and which allows us not only to create wealth for others, but to share that wealth. And the reason I've got that great belief is because there's, as a species, We need to cooperate and act collectively in order to face the problems which we face as individuals and as families, as communities, and even as sovereign nation states. Because the essence of human evolution and the fact that we are now dominate the planet is based on our ability to act collectively for the interests of all in that community. It was our ability to act collectively that allowed us to dominate the natural world. So I'm not a cynic. I'm a great believer in our capacity as human beings to force governments to make changes that put the interests of the many, that's the public, before the interests of the few, which are the corporations I spoke about at the beginning of this program. So ultimately, the ball's in your court. There are things we can all do, irrespective of how old we are, how long we've been on the planet, what we do, the amount of wealth we have at our hands. There are options. We all have options. So, think about it. You've been listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano. You can leave pleasant messages on 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489. You can write to me at Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. You can email me at anarchistage@yahoo.com or info@pipsy.net. You can join public interest before corporate interest right now by going to the webpage, have a look at their constitution. I'm a member. I'm actually the registered officer. info@pipsy.net. YouTube channels, public interest before corporate interest. Historical channel, josephtoscano.nam. Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. Go to the Anarchist Media Institute website. There's lots of things you can do. Many demonstrations can be involved in. You don't have to be involved in a demonstration. You can actually initiate change through getting together with like-minded people. So thank you for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. I'd like to thank people at the Community Radio Network for continuing to broadcast The Anarchist World this week to community radio stations across this country. Listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station next week. And if your local community radio station doesn't broadcast The Anarchist World this week and they're a member of the Community Radio Network, knock on their door, ask them to broadcast The Anarchist World this week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.